Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Standing by, the Terry and Ted podcast is sponsored by the UPS Store Canada.
Season 7. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, I guess, Ted, because it's only 10 episodes a season, but hey, not bad.
Well, we're hanging in there pretty good because back when we started the podcast, we were still using Roman numerals.
Yes.
It was season I.
I loved IV.
IV was special.
It's standing by the new season with a very special guest. We're going to get right to it and start by thanking our indefatigable sponsor, David Drucker and the good people at the UPS Store Canada. They are, once again, our title sponsor for the new season. And we sent a note to David saying, we're doing another season. And he said, yes.
Yeah, that's all he said. Yeah, he's a great supporter.
Yeah, really is. He said, as long as there's a Terry and Ted project, I'm there. The UPS Store Canada, you're familiar with it if you run a small business, because the UPS stores across the country, and they're way over 380 locations now, they help entrepreneurs. And they're entrepreneurs, so you end up getting to know the person who runs the local UPS store. They can help you with everything from shipping to labels to my favorite, shredding documents. If you need to shred documents, they can set you up with a mailbox so you don't have to use your home address. They really are, and not just for businesses too, by the way. They can take care of things like sending Christmas presents across the country like you did this year, Ted.
I did, yes. Yeah. Who did I send a Christmas present
Your mother.
To? My mother, yeah.
An
empty cookie tin.
So sweet.
Where are the cookies? Yeah. Well, I thought they might be stale by the time they got there, but now you have a tin to put fresh cookies in, Mom. Merry Christmas.
Find a location near you, theupsstore.ca. Very excited. Our first guest of the new season is the legendary Aislinn. We know him at, well, I know him as Tear Number One. You call me Tear Number Two, I think. When we
actually, it's the other way
is
around.
Is it the other way around?
I signed mine Terry Two when Terry I sent two, it to Terry
that's
One.
That's right. Yeah.
And you didn't send me any cookies this year. I'm really pissed off.
How are you, Terry? We tried to do this with you in season whatever.
Yeah, and we had during the pandemic.
Yeah,
we tried
during
to do
the
it
pandemic.
Online, and it didn't work
Remember?
Out.
And we had a lovely conversation, and it all went to shit technically, and we were unable to use it. So thank you so much for coming in. And it's timely because the book is coming out.
Book number 55.
Jesus. Is it 55?
55 books.
Wow.
So I'm starting to learn a thing or two about it.
Starting to get the hang of it?
Yeah. Like use UPS.
Yeah.
Or stuff like that.
If you're, by the way, if you're watching on YouTube, Ted is holding up a copy of the book, which I just saw 10 minutes ago. It's absolutely beautiful. And if you're watching on YouTube, Ter's wearing his Montreal Expos uniform.
Brad Wilkerson. They call him the last Expo.
Is he the
number
last?
Number 48.
Really?
He hit the last home run for the team.
Yeah.
And he was the Expos Player of the Year in the last year, 2004. And he cried.
Oh, is that right?
Kid from Kentucky.
No
he cried
kidding.
He was bawling his eyes out there. So I always liked him after that. And yeah. He went on to play for the Nationals and is a good coach. But number 48, Brad.
This is the real McCoy, this thing. You're
That's
wearing?
The real
it's
deal.
Really,
it's
really
even signed. On
yeah,
that.
It's yeah. really. Were you always a massive baseball fan,
yes.
Care? Always. Before the Expos, even.
Before the Expos, in the womb.
Okay, you tell.
My mother complained about me hitting fungos down there. Yeah, growing up, remember, people are surprised to find out I'm actually from Toronto initially, but when we were 10 years old, my dad decided, he's a writer, he decided Toronto was boring, even back then. And he wanted to move to Montreal and deal with characters and that sort of thing. And thank God he did, because I became an instant Montrealer. I lived just around the corner from the Forum, the old Forum.
Wow.
And there were street gangs roaming the alleys right downtown there, playing baseball in the summer, playing hockey in the winter at the Priest Farm, you know, with the seven rinks up there.
Yeah.
And I just loved it. And I've loved it ever since. Despite, well, the interesting stuff keeps me busy, keeps me in work. Right from the beginning.
Didn't you live near John Little?
He lived downstairs and I lived upstairs, the painter. I would go down and watch him paint.
The Canadiana of this part of your story is just unbelievable. I mean, he is a legendary
painter of street scenes in Montreal.
Yeah.
He's also my godfather.
Son of a gun.
And I would go down and watch him paint, and he'd talk about Jackie Robinson and the old days of Delormier Down and all of that stuff. And he would show me magazines from New York, Sport Magazine. And there was a cartoonist by the name of Willard Mullins who worked for them. And I just fell in love with this guy. The cartoons he was drawing with baseball catching, and he knew it wasn't just – he knew – how to draw a first baseman and how to snap the ball. Fell in love with this guy. This is my first cartoonist. My mother gave me an aptitude test because I was a little bit of a rascal. What was I going to do? And it came up either a photographer or a sports cartoonist.
No kidding.
Way back then.
Wow.
Suddenly went in that direction. I became a juvenile delinquent for a little while. I wasn't very good at that.
It's a rite of passage.
Yeah, but then I went to Quebec City, studied there at École des Beaux-Arts, and came to Montreal. Had two kids at that point, and I said, well, I got to find some work. Walked into a magazine. They said, Montreal Expos are coming, the Expos are coming to town, a baseball team. Could you do a cover for us, a drawing of Charles Bronfman with Jean Drapeau? We're paying $300.
Wow.
That got my interest. I went home and I said to my wife, we found it. We found the right thing.
That was a big coin in those days, eh?
It was huge. But they were, I think, a magazine called The Montrealer, I think they were subsidized, very much like the old New Yorker.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so that got me started.
So this would have been 1968, the year before the Expos got here,
came
or 69,
here from Quebec,
the actual year?
Quebec City in 67, 68, wandering around the streets of Montreal with a portfolio. We did that back in those days.
By the way, I just want to mention, if you don't know who John Little is, Google him. If you're a Montrealer, Google him. Phenomenal.
Yeah, he's a great painter.
Phenomenal.
And he's still alive.
Yeah, still alive.
94 years old.
Yeah. Is he still working, Tara?
You know, no, he's slowed down.
Yeah.
But he was the guy who first suggested I become a cartoonist.
Did you pick anything up from watching him paint?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I bet you did, eh?
Because he was a failed cartoonist at heart.
Is that right?
Yeah, exaggerated, doing drawings all of the time.
Yeah.
Like a caricaturist?
Yeah.
More of a social cartoonist, people walking down the street saying stupid things.
And when you look at one of his pieces, you're instantly transported to Montreal. It's like I'm a huge fan of his.
I dedicated the book to him.
Oh, you did?
I did.
I just saw the book, so I didn't get a chance to look close at it.
I'll show you later. There's a photo in there of Mary, my wife, showing John the first proofs of the book.
Amazing.
And,
Did you go to opening day, there?
What? Which one?
Oh, the Expos.
In 69?
In 69?
I did.
Were you at Jerry Park?
Yes, I was there.
Son of a gun. Wow.
Out in Jonesville, you know.
Left field
bleachers.
Out there.
Yeah. And Jonesville was left field.
Oh, yeah,
the
that's right.
Swimming pool was
right field.
And I have a John Little painting in there of Jonesville.
Yeah.
And there's a bearded guy down in the corner.
Yeah.
I'm in a John Little painting. Whoa.
How about that?
Big time, yeah.
That was not their first game ever, though. I remember watching their first game ever on TV, and I think it was in New York against the Mets. Do I have that right?
Yeah.
So who was the first – who did they play opening day at Jerry Park? Do you remember?
Oh, God. Who did – the Cardinals, was it?
Yeah, might have been. But I remember their first game ever. I think that they won 11-10 against
they
the
did
Mets
in New York.
New York. And I think the starting pitcher, if I'm not mistaken, one of the great baseball names of all time, Mudcat Grant. If he wasn't the starter, I know he pitched in that game at some point. Mudcat
sounds
Grant.
Like a movie.
How great is that?
And he was terrific. A poet, you know, he was a poet.
That
he,
I did that not, right?
Yeah, wow. He was a fascinating guy. And there's a great photo in there of everybody at the opener in New York with Jean Drapeau throwing out the first ball.
In New York?
In New York.
Really?
With the Mets.
Drapeau threw out the first pitch in New York.
And the Gazette ran a wonderful, they won the game, and the Gazette, Ted Blackman, wrote a wonderful headline, Expos in first place.
That's fantastic. That's very Blackman.
Yeah.
Ted Blackman was a very famous Montreal
sportsman. There's lots of stuff in there. It's a trip down memory lane, not only for me, for a lot of people, because remember, this is a magic period in Montreal. Things were blossoming. Yeah. We had had so many things happen here, the World's Fair and so on. Jean Drapeau was on, the Metro had opened, all of that. It looked, we were headed into the major leagues with the Expos. We were a North American major league team.
Yeah. It was a big deal, a Canadian team.
It was huge.
Huge.
It was
huge. Huge news. And it was like Drapeau was on a roll, eh? Metro and then Expo.
Place des Arts, all kinds of things.
Yeah. By the way, there are some unbelievable classic cartoons of the late mayor. Did you get along with him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had me to City Hall with my two young daughters, and he gave them grapefruit juice. It was what he did. He was trying
Is that
to,
right?
Yeah,
that
he gave them glasses of grapefruit juice, and they thought this was a nice old guy.
Yeah.
I mean, much younger than I am now, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's all relative. He was because I had done a devastating cartoon of him, and he phoned a friend of his, and he said, have you seen that wicked cartoon in the Gazette? And the guy who was Robert Lapomme, he looked at the cartoon, he said, yes, but look who's in the superior position, Jean, because it was Jean Drapeau in bed with René Lévesque. Right? And then there was a phone call to the Gazette warning the original, what Jean Drapeau got.
Yeah, of course. You know. Well, that was one of your most famous cartoons, and also the one about the Olympics was also.
Yes.
I still see them put that cartoon up on the news sometimes. You know, you see it on CBC News World, they make reference.
It's nice when you sit there in your underwear and you do the drawing and suddenly it's iconic. You think, wow, what?
And the cartoon we're referring to is, you drew him as a, because he famously said that the Olympics
can no more have a deficit than a man can have a baby.
Right.
And so I drew him on the phone calling Henry Morgenthaler, the abortionist.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's...
I'm looking at the book, and I'm telling you, if you're a baseball fan, and even if you're a Montrealer, you're going to absolutely love this book, Montreal Expos, A Cartoonist's Love Affair. The foreword is by Charles Bronfman. One of the chapters is called Rusty and Company, Early Expos Reporters and Broadcasters, The Expos After Rusty, Dick Williams Takes Charge, The Gary Carter Trade, Bronfman Sells the Expos, Felipe's Baseball Academy, Jeffrey Loria, and Merci Mes Amis is how it ends. It's a history from start to finish, and it seems to me, although I haven't looked at it, I'm just looking at the chapters here, it's infused with your love of not just the game, but of the Expos.
Yes, of course,
yeah.
Of course. And I mean, it was a whole thing that we lived through. So it's a bit of a history book, too. And I'm finding that a lot of women are enjoying the book because it describes the times. I meld that in, referendums, all of this stuff. And then the change of direction of Major League Baseball towards favoring Toronto after the 76.
It kind of coincides with the path Montreal took.
Exactly.
Don't you think?
It does. And that's quite deliberate.
Yeah.
It's not just another collection of photographs, glossy photographs of a bunch of ball players, and also some offbeat stuff. I mean, Bill Lee became one of my best friends. So there's stuff in there that nobody knows about. Like him at big at the big O, the yeah. Olympic Stadium.
Yeah.
He stops the game, lights, there's a moth, and he cups it, and he walks it over the side and lets it go. And they go, Bill, Bill, they go crazy. They go crazy. Out in the parking lot after the game, we get into his van and it's filled with mosquitoes. And he's whacking. Always the showman.
Which, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. And he'll be coming up to help me promote the book at some point. Yeah. So getting to and Ellis Valentine, I loved Ellis. But he got into problems with drugs, with cocaine. But he's a kid. Yeah. You know, well, you go into a bar and some girl says, here, try this.
Well,
Tim Raines also.
It was the 1980s.
Yes, but here's the thing, that I had problems too at the time. You know, on Crescent Street,
right.
A lot of us did. Ellis Valentine sobered up and got straight the same year I did, 1985. And we often talk about that. About how we turned our lives around.
Right.
So many stories like that in there. So it's a personal... let me explain that this is not an official history of the Montreal Expos.
Okay.
What it is a history of my experience with the Montreal Expos. So I wasn't everywhere all the time, so there's stuff that isn't in there, but many people have written material about that. So I add this book to books that are very important. I also quote a lot of terrific writers. I mean, Mike Farber.
Yep.
And he helped me very much with this. And a lot of people nudging me. No, that wasn't 1976. That was 1983. Oh, geez. You know? Like,
yeah.
And you get little mental blocks for you. Know, like, I couldn't remember the team before. Who was the first team we played? Jesus Christ. Who? Anyway.
Yeah. The Gazette sent you down was it every spring you went down?
Pretty well every spring training.
And was that you saying, I'm going down, or was it them saying, hey,
it was partly responsible for me going to the Gazette. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I had been working for the Montreal Star.
Yeah.
And there are all these white-haired guys, well, I guess like me now, but white-haired guys running the newspaper from Westmount. And I expressed, you know, I was drawing political cartoons and establishing a fair name at the time,
yeah.
Although I didn't know much about politics. I just made them all look funny. And then I said, he's a genius. well, boy, who do I care? Anyway, Denny Harvey was a very progressive editor at the Montreal Gazette. And they had beaten the Montreal Star in coverage of the October crisis. I had noticed that. And so Denny kept calling me and said, come on over to the Gazette. We got a younger staff here. Da, da, da. He said, I can up your money a little bit, but I'll give you complete freedom. That doesn't mean we'll print everything, but you can draw anything you want. And if we choose to, and that was unheard of in those days, because usually
Then
as a joke, I said to Denny, all right, will you send me to spring training? He said, you've got it.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, nice family holiday, going to watch baseball players.
Yeah, and those features were really popular. I remember them, and baseball fans loved them. Absolutely.
Yeah, they
loved
still
them.
Do. They still talk about them. Yeah. So it was just, it was magic. And the Gazette did indeed improve, and they had a terrific Tim Burke, Brody Snyder, Ted Blackman, all of these terrific people were writing, all Ian McDonald, not Ian, the other Ian. Anyway, so it was a fabulous place to be in the 70s. And so I made the right move, and I'm still here, and where's the Montreal Star, you know?
Yeah. What gave you the idea, Tara? Like, what was the germ of, hey, I think I'm going to do a book on the Expos run?
I kind of had it in mind last 2 years ago. I did a book with Yvan Cornoyer on the Canada-Russia hockey series.
Right.
Sold out.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
I think, wait a minute. Books on Jean Marchand don't sell out. You know? And, you know, I had this portfolio of hundreds of Expos drawings. I was just sneaking them on the editorial page, sports page, wherever I could. And so I began to swirl in my mind, but maybe I should should do a book on the Expos. I went to Expos Fest and met Perry Giannanis, who is the guy who runs Expos Fest and is raising $3 million for the Montreal Children's Hospital.
That's amazing.
Wow.
He's got $1.4 million presently. And so I said to Perry, you're a charity I can really get behind. I'd like to produce a book on the Expos. And he's a big fan of mine. And I'll give you the author's royalties, like about 10% of sales. And so he said, my God, that would be great if you could do that. So that's what we're doing.
What's Perry's connection with the Expos? Just a fan?
He's a huge fan. But he had a niece that died, unfortunately, at 5 or 6 years old. A wonderful little girl. And he's very much a family man. There are family members all over Laval. That's why I call him Saint-Paris de Laval. Because when the niece died, he wanted to be able to do something for her. And he said, but I don't know anything about anything except the Expos. He'd been a fan. So he began, he got, Jacques Doucet was the first guy. He said, I want to do something. What do you think of this idea?
Jacques Doucet is a longtime Expos broadcaster.
Yeah, very long time. He was following us as long as I was. And Jacques thought, well, this is a cute idea. It's a nice idea. Might get a couple hundred bucks, maybe a few thousand. First year they did it, 2016, $100,000 they raised by bringing in some ball players who signed some baseballs, and they had a nice banquet, and $100,000. And so each year since then, he's done it. And he's famous among the ballplayers. I was with him the other day. He phoned up Henry Rodriguez, trying to talk him into coming up this year. Henry was bargaining. I want a box of cigars. And you know, he's dickering back and forth with him. But he knows all of these.
Yeah.
He's gotten to know all of these guys, and he's legendary. And of course, the players get some money for signing baseballs And they all love them. So each year this event happens.
It seems like the alumni have a pretty special connection, or some of them at least have a pretty special connection with the team as well. I suppose that's not uncommon among former ball players and the teams they played for. But I don't know. Is there something extra special about the Expos and their alumni?
Yeah, listen, some of the players hated it. They couldn't stand the politics. Daryl Knowles, a few people like that, Steve Renko, they couldn't stand Montreal. They did the best they could. But ball players that will always deliver. Ron Fairley was another one, because he'd come from L.A., you know, lights L.A.,
right.
And he comes to this cold place. But a lot of them did like it, and particularly, I think, on the secondary level, guys like Jerry White. Mm-hmm. You remember Jerry White?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I had a nice afternoon with Jerry White last September in San Francisco. We sat around and he told me stories, some I couldn't even print. But story after story, because they loved to talk. They loved to talk about the old days. So it has a special place in many people's hearts, and a lot of the ball players too. You know, Bill Lee keeps coming back. Of course, Philippe Allou is married to a Montrealer, and what was announced that Philippe was going to become the manager, the Journal de Montréal put the Montreal spin on it, was saying a Laval man is becoming the.
That's as good as the Expos are in first place.
Yeah. And
anyway,
so you're now.
I know you're both going to enjoy the book. It's filled with tons of stuff.
Look at this heartbreaking picture of Warren Cromartie.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that something? That's a John Mahoney picture, right there.
That is a John Mahoney picture.
Is that like 1980 or 81?
Well, it's got a Blue Monday.
It's
Blue Monday.
It's a heartbreaking black and white shot of Warren Cromartie. I'm telling you, Expos fans and Montrealers are going to go crazy for this.
And I must credit everybody, John Mahoney and Dave Sidaway, both still active with the Gazette, both terrific photographers. They were very helpful in giving me access to the older stuff, and also some of the baseball writers. Ron Roush.
Ron Roush
is going to come out to one of the openings of that sort of thing. So
Ron Roush made the call on Blue Monday.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah. He called that Rick Monday home run.
We have to talk about another legendary Montrealer who also came back to sponsor the podcast once again, our good friend Sugar Sammy.
I wonder if Sammy is a Expos fan.
I don't know. I know Sammy is a massive Terry Mosher fan because I was talking to him on the phone the other night, Ter.
Yeah.
And he still gets a tingle when he said you invited him over to the house and gave him a pic of a cartoon, which he proudly displays in his house. He said, you know, is there any
There's
more?
There's a Sugar Sammy cartoon, Mosher cartoon?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And he's saying something dubious.
Well, that's what he does. Yeah. Dubious but funny. Yeah. Dubious and hilarious,
but,
no doubt.
But you know this. Amongst funny men, there's a certain camaraderie that exists.
Yes.
Bowser and Blue loved the guy. He loved them and used to credit him. And then when I got in touch with him, he was... His parents, or maybe it was his grandparents, loved me.
Yeah. Well, no, you know, Sammy and I were saying there is no bigger thrill for, you know, he's much younger than I am, but for me, I remember when you did a cartoon of me, and it's hard to describe what it means if you're a Montrealer and you choose to do a cartoon, you kind of get launched into this echelon of these, you know, famous Montrealers.
You're in the pantheon.
It's kind of like you sort of knighted me. You know what I mean? Like you end up in this really, really special company. And Sammy said that's how he felt, and that's how his parents felt. Because
I get phone calls from assistants to cabinet ministers saying, are you you think about putting my boss in a cartoon? And I say, well, sure, have him do something silly.
Yeah, get him to do something stupid. Listen, Sugar Sammy is going out again, and he is, going out. He stays out. I talked to him the other day. He was in Miami. He's doing a tour through the U.S. right now. He is going to continue. You're going to rear duh. And as he said to me in an email he sent me, he said, go see what all the outrage is all about. He said, I've been offending Quebec media, politicians, and entertainers with this new show, and nobody is spared. And that's very true. Ted and I went to see it last fall, and it was just so...
We sat beside Jean-François Lisée, as I recall. I think he laughed.
Yeah, he laughed too, All of 2023 was sold out. 2024, get this, they put tickets on sale for 2024. It's already sold out until September. So he's just added new shows, but if you want to go, don't wait because the tickets go so quickly. And all you have to do is watch Sugar Sammy on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. He posts these clips from these clubs in the United States, and it's absolutely terrific. If you want more information, sugarsammy.com. Sugar Sammy, you're going to rear duh. Like he says, go see what all the outrage is about. It's one of the funniest people on the planet.
If he sticks around long enough, you know, eventually he'll be like me. And it will be, you're going to rear tres.
or XIII.
Yeah. He's a wonderful guy.
And that's the other thing. He's one of the nicest men.
He proves that Quebecers are finally able to laugh at themselves. Yeah. Usually it used to be Quebecers poked fun at the other guys.
Yeah.
Didn't laugh at themselves much. But now with Serge Chaplot and a bunch of people like that, Quebec can laugh. And that shows maturity in society.
Yeah, and it's. I think it's fascinating.
Although François Legault isn't laughing much.
No.
Still not, eh?
No.
We're just putting the boots to him.
It's kind of like, you know, the journey that this book will take you on when you think about the history of Montreal. Sammy is one of the very first Bill 101 kids who became famous. And it's an example of how that law worked in his family's favor.
He represents the evolution of Montreal.
He sure does.
And of Quebec.
Yeah, he does.
Maybe similar to me with the election of the PQ.
Yes.
Suddenly, 1976, people all over the world wanted cartoons on Quebec.
Well, you had the perfect look at it with which the cartoon is in here, I think, isn't it? The Valium cartoon?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's another legendary cartoon because you seem like the only English guy in the province who wasn't freaking out.
Well, let me put it this way. All these Anglos were leaving. I tripled my income. Well, I'm staying.
You always said that to me, Tara, when I said, why, you know, because you had opportunities to leave, and you said to me, what are you, nuts? You know, for a political cartoonist, where else would I want to be?
Yeah.
I just want to take a quick detour and ask you about your feelings about Mr. Mulroney's passing. I was thinking about you watching the film.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, we had a great opportunity to reconnect nice. A couple of years ago. He came out to the book launch.
You were there.
I was there that night.
The book launch of that Yvan Cornroy and I had done. And Yvan Cornroy loves him. And we actually shook hands and then hugged. And then he had seen the photograph of Jean Chrétien strangling me, much like the Shawinigan handshake.
Right.
He said, Terry, that looked like fun. I said, well, apparently. He said, may I? And he did.
Did you get a picture?
Oh, we got a picture.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we got a picture. So, and that's sort of because we should explain to your listeners.
Yeah.
I was very tough on him.
Sure.
But I was a liberal lefty. I couldn't stand the idea of free trade. And I went at him in a GST. He was right about the GST. I was wrong because it saved us some bankruptcy. But I was really tough.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was a Montrealer too. I knew him a little better than other people, his quirks and his mannerisms and so on. And, you know, he told a friend of mine, I would wake up some mornings and spew my cereal when I see an Aislinn cartoon. But his brother was one of my best friends, who I warned Gary. I said, Gary, if he becomes prime minister, you know, he said, oh, we're tough. We can take it. Well, his brother couldn't.
Oh, his brother couldn't.
But Brian, let me put it this way. Brian always took it on that massive chin of his. And so it was nice to get together with him and so on. And then we started exchanging notes and so on. So I first drank with him in 1966 in Quebec City in a tavern.
He was a lawyer.
So I knew him long before he was. No, he was a student at Laval.
Oh, he was a student. Okay.
So it was nice to reestablish. Yeah. I mean, the politics are the politics, but, you know, friendship is. So I did a very nice farewell friend cartoon in the Gazette.
Yeah, you sure did.
On him and some other stuff. But then brought up the memories of this, that, and the other, too. So,
well, I
we're Montrealers at heart.
Yeah, Terry. And I.
So get your ass home.
Yeah. Yes, sir. I actually posted this on Twitter the other day. I found a clip on YouTube of Mr. Mulroney's first day in the House of Commons.
Mm-hmm.
Where he was welcomed by the.
I watched that.
Then
yesterday.
Current Prime Minister, Mr. Trudeau. And it was such a clever and like they were taking pot shots at each other, but it was elegant.
It was good natured.
And it was good natured.
Yeah.
It was eloquent. And it made me long for those days of politics. And Mr. Mulroney was the guy that, made me realize you got to try even. And I wish we were back in that era. He was a nice man.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't agree with him politically all the time, but when you stood across from him or sat across from
him, his heart was in the right place.
Yeah, and
just
he believed
his mouth wasn't.
Yeah,
because he would just spurt stuff out and get him in trouble.
Yeah,
so another famous cartoon, I drew him with a Band-Aid on his mouth, like just keep quiet, Brian.
He was so eloquent that night at your book launch. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think
it's off the cuff. Wasn't
it? And I think you asked him on the spur of the moment to speak.
Yeah,
have I got that right? He wasn't expected to say anything. Terry asked him, "Can you say if he was?"
And all
he was terrific.
Interesting. It was interesting seeing all my lefty friends in the audience. melting.
Yeah. Like, well, all you have to do is go on YouTube and watch one of his two eulogies for two different American presidents. And I never felt
the more, only foreign statesman yeah,
never
to
felt
eulogize
more
two different American
to
presidents.
To be a Canadian watching him speak. Yeah. And my favorite cartoon, do you know if he has it? The one with the bra? Did he get that cartoon?
Miller didn't want it.
Okay.
It was even before he was prime minister, yeah. And he was campaigning, clearly. And they're getting Joe Clark out of the way, and he's wandering the country. And so I drew him because somebody said, well, what are the cartoonists? What do you think of them? He said, oh, I love what they do with my chin. So I thought, okay, Brian. Showing off your chin, are you? All right. So I put his chin in a brassiere. With cleavage, you know?
The cleft?
Yeah, yeah, the cleft. The cleavage. It's still my favorite cartoon.
That's
Walter.
Great.
But I think Mila spluttered a little bit at that. But nevertheless, yeah. It's fun. I don't know how I got away with all this.
Tell me what you can tear about Charles Bronfman. Everybody I speak to about Charles Bronfman, I mean, you have to give him credit because, I mean, he made it happen, right? He brought the ball team to Montreal.
Oh, you have to give him credit. He
Yeah, it doesn't happen without him.
And the problem was that after he sold the team, the team desperately needed another yeah. Charles Bronfman who yeah. could say, let's go that extra mile. And I really am critical of the new management.
Yeah.
After they took over, this wasn't Charles' fault because they had to make some arrangement and there's yeah. shared ownership and it's confusing. And I ended up drawing them a couple of times as a collection of turkeys squawking at each other. Jean Coutu going on and on about something. Jean Coutu knows a lot about baby aspirin.
Yeah.
But he knows, I won't say it, about baseball.
Fuck all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck all about it.
The foreword is by Charles Bronfman.
Okay. It is.
I don't want you to put words in his mouth, Tara, but wait, does he reflect back on it fondly?
Oh, yeah.
He does, eh?
I mean, you know, his mother wanted him to invest in the opera or something, and his wife wanted him to do art galleries.
Yeah.
And as he says, I couldn't stand back then. Art galleries or the opera. And then John Drapeau comes looking for $1 million. This I could get into, yeah. having no idea how it would escalate. Yeah. He would become the main guy because people dropped in, they dropped out, they weren't sure about it. Again, it's hard to find people with a real good attitude about the city itself. And he loves Montreal, like me, but 10 years earlier, right. he had gone off to De Laurentiers Downs and watched the Montreal Royals and loved Rocky Nelson just as I did. And so he came to this thing honestly, and he was very enthusiastic. But there's also a description in there of how he realized it was turning too much of a business. It wasn't much fun anymore. It was the signing of the Gary Carter contract for $2.5 million or whatever it was. Not much now.
No.
But back then it pulled him into a reality where he said, wait a minute, this is getting out of hand. It's supposed to be fun. And his mind began to change about being involved with the team and then other huge contracts coming along. So he just decided, well, it's time for somebody else to take over.
What's your opinion or take on...
By the way, may I say?
Yeah.
He's still a fun guy.
He is. He's...
And he will send me a note saying, I didn't like that cartoon, particularly on Israel.
Yeah. I was thinking about this last night. And Ted, you're such a massive baseball fan too. Maybe you can explain it to me. There's something about the Expos, and I'm wondering if, was it the city that infused the history and the legend of the team, the Nos Amours, and, you know, when you talk to people who had season tickets, they're looking for ways to get baseball back here. There seems to be such a, you know, it's almost like, Expos fans are like Brooklyn Dodger fans.
Yeah,
you know,
I just don't know if there are enough of them to to support the return of a team. And what I'd like to ask Terry is, you know, the book's called Aislinn's Montreal Expos, A Cartoonist's Love Affair, and it's a love affair with a sad and tragic ending.
Yeah.
And do you think there was one singular event that led to the demise of the team, or was it a series of circumstances?
No, it's a collection of a number of things.
Yeah.
Something that nobody points out, Ted, or I haven't read anybody pointing out, that the election of the Parti Québécois in 1976, and it was one of the worst seasons ever for the Expos. So nobody cared, because that same year the Olympics had taken place. But Major League Baseball says, wait a minute, they've elected a government there that wants to separate, like they thought they were terrorists or something. And it was the next year that Toronto was awarded a Major League franchise. And I think the favoritism turned towards Toronto, which is so much more of a homogenous North American city, you know. So that was a factor, early factor.
Yeah.
Then the referendum in 1980, and, you know,
base did that chase down the 401 individually and corporately? How much, I wonder, did they lose in terms of season tickets?
Well, there would have been that, but they're still contacting me saying, I want the book. Hmm. When we put a notice up that this book was available, there's a soft cover, but also a limited edition hardcover edition that is selling for $100 to raise money for the hospital,
right.
and signed by Charles Bronfman and myself. It's not even out yet, and we sold half the books.
Wow.
And they're coming from Morocco, Paris, all over the place, San Francisco, people who have heard about this book. So I've discovered a new way of selling books. No, I have, really, because they're all former Montrealers out there.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Yeah.
So many from BC.
Yeah, we notice it on the podcast. We notice that, you know, we get reaction from, you know, I think Nigeria, the Philippines, there's like, you know, Hong Kong, there's people that are ex-Montrealers living all over the world. And a lot of them are English Montrealers, speaking of 1976. I know nobody wants to admit that or talk about it, but I'm sorry. That caused a flight of English people and English companies. But I'm always...
That's why the volume cartoon is so relevant, because a lot of people don't realize the intent of the volume cartoon was, okay, Anglos, take a volume. Everybody take a volume. Everybody calm down.
Yeah.
And Terry, a lot of us did.
Yeah. But don't you agree there's kind of... I don't know. It's
special.
There's a French Canadian Nos Amours, you know, the big O and the singing and the, you know, you see people in the States still wearing Montreal Expos ball caps. Like, there's something about the legend that I, you know, in my opinion, it was infused by Montreal, was it not?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Terry's just showing me the, two of the cartoons, actually, about the Expos bringing...
Two fans.
Yeah.
One French, one English. One's drinking a beer, the other's drinking a bière.
Yeah. And one's wearing the maple leaf, the other one's wearing the fleur de lis. But they're both wearing ball caps.
Yeah. They're both hugging each other.
Yeah,
that's very much...
Yeah, there's something about it.
I've done similar cartoons on the Habs, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Where they unite so many of us.
Yeah, and there's just, I don't know, there's something about, you know, the passion for the Expos that exists long after they've gone, and there seems to be a new generation of fans all holding their breath and crossing their fingers. But I think, as you pointed out, Ted, I don't think there's a financial feasibility here.
What are they spending on to replace the roof at the Olympic Stadium? Is it $780 million?
Yeah.
Why not put that towards a new stadium downtown?
Yeah.
We all ask the same questions, Ted. Why not this? Why not that? Here, the classic example, I think, was Lucien Bouchard, because the referendum had been so close in 1995. And then Claude Brochu, who tried his best, but boy, were there screw-ups. In any case, he went hat in hand to Lucien Bouchard right after the referendum. hoping to build that stadium you're talking about right downtown. And they, they didn't need much money from Quebec, a couple of hundred million, I think.
This is the second referendum in 95.
Yeah, and Lucien Bouchard just looked at him like he was crazy. He said, I've got hospitals closing. I've got this, that, and the other, and I just don't. And he wasn't a ball fan anyway. And that killed the idea of Quebec not participating. And when I, so I say when Quebec does not participate, and the business world in Quebec is a world unto its own, with a lot of backbiting and competition and so on, nobody stepped up to replace Charles Bronfman. You need a benevolent dictator to run a baseball team.
Yeah.
And nobody stepped up. So there's, you can point fingers in every direction, except the only people, even us fans, began failing the Expos by not going to games. But who you can't point at are the players themselves.
Right.
They played their hearts out. And the year before they folded on 2004, if you remember, in 2003, there was a brief pennant run. We knew they were gone, but they were – they were getting close to being participating.
They were competitive.
They were competitors. And here they are playing their hearts out. A lot of unknown players in a lot of cases. And, of course, it just breaks my heart in a way that that nobody could step up and save this team.
I remember, I was a kid, but excuse me, but I remember the there was a time when it was opening day. You probably remember too, Ted. And if the sun was shining, nobody went to work. Everybody went to the ballpark. Yeah. It was always like 50,000 people at opening day, and then 16,000 the following weekend.
Yeah.
It was the, there was a, it was a real event. When
I just remembered a cartoon. I couldn't find it to put it in the book. But a boss is saying to an employee, "You realize this is the 14th year in a row you're going to your grandmother's funeral."
That's exactly right. Because I remember, you know, in this in the city where people went out for lunch and never went back to work in the afternoon, this was a great spot to go for the afternoon on a sunny day, tempered a little bit by the fact, you know, it was a lot nicer to sit at Jerry Park on a sunny afternoon than it was to sit in the Big O.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite memory, Tara, or a memory that sticks out, leaving out Blue Monday, which everybody talks about?
I guess my favorite memory involves somebody who didn't even play for the Expos, is that a brilliant PR guy who was very good with the French French fans. He understood them implicitly, and it, because Fanning and Mikhail didn't speak any French, Jean Mock didn't speak any French. His name was Larry Chasson, and he was from the Maritimes. And Larry came to me when he... I went to see Ted Blackman sent me. I said, I hope I can get to see a game or two. I went to see Larry. He said, walk up the steps, ask for Larry, say, I sent you. Back in the days when you get away with that stuff, you know. And Larry said, Ted sent you? I said, yeah. He said, it's unusual to have a cartoonist in the press box, but nevertheless, and he gave me a season pass.
For the press box?
Yeah.
Wow.
Was this Jerry Park or the Big
Yeah,
O?
Jerry Park. Yeah. Wow. I'm up there. I'm hanging. Who's this guy sketching in the corner? In any case, that just leads to the real story. Was a couple of seasons later, Larry says to me, do you realize that there's a rule in the Baseball Writers Association handbook, there's a rule that states every major league newspaper is allowed to have one cartoonist as a member? And that goes back to the origins, 1900, when every big city newspaper had a sports cartoonist. Excuse me. I said, no. He said, apply, and within 10 years, if you stay a member for 10 years, you can vote for the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Holy
shit.
So I applied, and they accepted me.
Huh.
So in 1981, when they accepted me, 1991, I first voted.
Wow.
The Hall of Fame.
That must have been exciting.
This is what's exciting.
Probably still exciting.
Yeah.
Still exciting. It's what's exciting is that Fergie Jenkins, the great Canadian, got in that year by one vote. My vote. It's true.
Yeah,
he got in by one vote.
No kidding.
So that's my biggest thrill.
How do you feel about Pete Rose?
I think eventually, somebody said there should be a special category for screw-ups in the Baseball Hall of Fame. That makes sense because Ty Cobb, you know, shot people.
Yeah. He was a horrible human being.
Yeah. Hank Wilson was a terrible drunk. So maybe with an asterisk and put a bottle beside it or something, because he has to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. You know, well, especially now, I mean, gambling is a business partner.
Oh, my God.
With Major League Baseball and every other sport.
There's a cartoon in there about people wandering into a baseball park saying, it's terrible about Pete Rose. And meanwhile, there's an ad for a dog track gambling.
Yeah, I don't know the Shohei Ohtani story, but there's been he's been caught up in a gambling scandal as well. And meanwhile, Pete Rose, the most prolific hitter in baseball history, just in
Charlie Hustle.
Numerical terms, and just like a guy who just who loved the game and played the game harder than anybody ever,
and knew the game, you know, he's not Einstein, but he knows baseball.
Yeah.
There's a cartoon in the book I want to ask Terry about that the Gazette chose not to print, and I'll ask him about that after we thank our good friends at the Mercenstead, whom we're going to go see. I'm excited about this because I'm only in town for the week for now, I haven't seen the Mercens in a while. So do they know we're coming, or
they
are we
know
doing
we're coming,
a pop
yes. I'm taking a chance. We're recording this the first week of April. I'm taking a chance and getting my summer tires on.
Okay.
In the first week of April, which is always a roll of the dice in Montreal.
It is.
And as I have been doing for the last, 25 years, I'm doing it at Mercen Automotive. We go back generations. With the Mercens.
We
go back to the Mark and Bonnie Mercen days. Kara Mercen and her husband Celso run the joint now. And I wouldn't go anywhere else to have my car serviced and have my tires replaced and stored. I wouldn't go anywhere else because I know I can trust them.
Yep.
And that's why generations of customers have been coming back to the Mercens forever and a day, because they will not sell you anything you don't need. They will not perform service on your car that is not required. They will do what is required, that and that alone, because they know that by treating you right, they'll keep you coming back.
It's nice when you don't know anything. You and I both, what we know about cars, we could write on the back of a dime.
I know how to start it and drive it.
Yeah, exactly. and even then.
Yeah.
it's nice to go to take your car and leave there with confidence.
Yeah.
Like, you know that you're going to be treated well. The Mercens are on Saint-Jacques, just past Cavendish. And, of course, you can find them online. And you can also old-fashioned call them, too, by the way.
That's right. They'll answer the phone. Yes. Say hi to Val.
Yeah.
Mention my name. Get a free blank stare, as Andrew Carter likes to say.
And I'm really thrilled that the folks at Accutech Electric, another family-run business, who took a flyer on us last season, sent us a note and said, hey, would you guys take us on as a sponsor again?
And I said, we know even less about electricity than we do about cars.
Uh-oh. Accutech Electric is a family-run business that they do everything. When it comes to, first of all, when it comes to electricity, you shouldn't be fooling around.
No.
For starters.
You might want to get a professional.
Right. Yeah, you don't want
to. As opposed to stick a fork in the outlet to see if it's working properly.
I think I can do that. No, you can't. You can't. You should call the folks at Accutech Electric. And by the way, they don't just do residential stuff. They can also do commercial stuff. They can design electrical layouts for new builds. They can, if you're building a house and you're looking for somebody to lay it out electrically, they can do that. And again, it's a family-run business that has the kind of values that we really relate to. You know, the way they treat their employees, the way they treat their customers, the way they do business, their values, their morals. We love them a lot. And we were thrilled when Trish sent me a note and said, the gang here, you know, we would love to be a partner with you again this year. So if you are building, if you have electrical work that needs doing, and, you know, if you're renovating and you're looking for somebody to do it, Accutech Electric, you can find them online. It's Accutech, Accutech.ca. I'm pretty sure I got it. I didn't bring my notes.
Accutech Montreal.
There you go.
I know. I think there's a company in Calgary that has the same name.
Yeah.
You want the Montreal ones.
Yeah. So thanks to both the Mersons and Accutech again. Tear this cartoon. I won't do it justice if you're just listening to the podcast and driving the car. But there's a couple in bed, and over the bed is a giant Expos logo. And the caption is, "Oops, I thought you were Bill Lee." And I don't know anything about the scandal, but the cartoon's funny.
That's great.
And you said the caption underneath the picture in the book, "I drew this cartoon for the Gazette after the scandal was revealed. My newspaper chose not to publish it." What was the scandal there?
1986, I believe it was, 86, 87. Murray Cook was a new, bright, young a general manager of the Expos.
Another New Brunswicker, if I'm not mistaken.
He was a New Brunswicker, and he was a terrific guy, and we all loved him, and he was bright. He'd worked with, I think, the White Sox or somebody, in any case, a couple of organizations before. And then suddenly, he resigned. It caught everybody off guard.
Out of the blue.
Yeah, and Tim Burke, Serge Doucette. I mean, what? And then Murray Cook said, well, it's for family reasons. Uh-oh. We always know what that means, for family reasons, right? Well, it turns out that he'd been sleeping with the vice president, Claude Brochu's wife.
Oh, oh boy.
And so he had to go.
Yeah, I guess.
Had to go. And at the time, wow. I thought, you know, geez, what's going on? So I just thought, it's the question that Bill Lee would do, but Murray Cook. I said, have a woman in bed. And she said, oh, I thought you were Bill Lee. I made a big mistake. And the Gazette wasn't printed, but everybody wanted copies. Everybody wanted copies.
So does Murray know about this?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Oh, no doubt.
Sure.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, it's it word of mouth. Yeah. I'm quite sure. But so, so hanky-panky just wasn't confined to, you
the
know,
ball players.
The clubhouse. Yeah. You know.
I can't wait to read this book, Terry.
By the way, let me finish.
Yes, absolutely.
It all ended up good news.
Yes.
Claude Brochu found another wonderful woman, and they're still married today. And Murray Cook married his former wife.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. How about that?
Okay, so everybody lived happily ever
after
so far.
Yeah, one of those. But they were the 80s, too.
Yeah.
You remember the
80s.
Vaguely,
yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. This, I'm telling you, if you're a Montrealer, I keep opening the book. I haven't, I've just set eyes on the book.
Look at the first page inside front cover.
Right there.
That's.
This is you, eh?
No. No? It's Ron Roush.
Scorecard.
He was so thorough.
Look at this.
A scorecard from a game in San Diego.
Cool. Wow.
And then the next page is on inside the back cover.
He's got good handwriting too, Ron does.
Yeah.
What caught my eye was the picture of Ted Blackman and his ode to Montreal. There are a couple of pictures of Blackman, and scanning quickly, I see the names of Ted Blackman and Tim Burke and George Balkin and Mitch Melnick. If you are a Montrealer, or if you know somebody who's lived in Montreal and now is living out in BC. You're going to absolutely love this book, and it's a book, by the way, go ahead, Tara, turn it to where you want
to
turn
it.
It's not just a book of cartoons. It's chapters, written chapters with pictures and cartoons and memorabilia. Oh, for God's sake, look at that. There's a picture of the old Pulse guys. Andrew Marquis, Don McGowan, and Ron Roush.
And down below,
yeah,
Dick
Jim Bay.
And
Jim
Digger.
Bay.
Digger
Bay.
One, yeah.
Yeah, this is giving me chills.
Ron Roush was a very, very important part of it because he was the most popular guy in Montreal.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
CFCF, everybody watched him.
Yeah.
His spring training reports were always wonderful.
And get a load of the burns on these guys, eh? Mm. The sideburns on the Pulse desk.
Sideburns. And the Dorian suits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tara, when does the book come out? And how do people get it? Where do they find it?
It's sort of the official launch is at Expos Fest.
Okay.
But that's all sold out. That's on April the 19th.
Okay.
So it's seeping its way into bookstores now. You can find signed books here, there, and everywhere in Montreal.
These, bookstores are going to be clamoring for this. Because this is the kind of thing where somebody gets it and tells somebody else, and then they want it, and et cetera, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I could, and we've been lucky enough to be invited. When we're recording this coming Wednesday, you're having a thing.
Well, it's a special event. It's not the official launch. What it is, it's Charles Bronfman is coming into town. So I asked Charles, would you come over and thank a few people who helped?
Yeah.
The Mike Farbers, the photographers. He said, sure. And it turned into people finding about it. And so at the wonderful historic Atwater Library, and by the time this is, it will have passed, Charles is going to come and thank all these people. And I can say it now with a surprise guest, Yuppie.
Oh, good.
And,
fantastic.
And all kinds of things like that. It's just to thank you, because I must mention again that all of the people who contributed this, the Gazette, the McCord Museum, wonderful photo archives, St. Perry of Laval, so many people, when they discovered that I was giving my author royalties to the Montreal Children's Hospital, they said, well, you can use me for nothing, too.
Oh,
so it's a thank you to them, because I couldn't have done it without them.
What a kick, too, Tara, to, you know, at this point in the game for you to be doing something that you're so passionate about. And I would imagine you had a ball doing this.
I'm supposed to be in a rocking chair complaining about kids.
Yelling at people to get off your lawn.
With my dog. But anyway, it's... I just like to disappear into these things.
Yeah.
It's wonderful, and I really got a taste for it when I researched the Canada-Russia hockey series, which I went to in my last book. And so it's a real kick. 400 days it took me.
Wow. How about that? I could talk to you all day. Actually, maybe we'll have you back, because there's all kinds of other stuff I wanted to talk to you about, but we're running out of racetrack, and it's Sunday. And, oh, there's UP there. Doesn't say much, eh?
With Celine Dion.
With Celine Dion. A very young Celine Dion.
Yeah.
This book is a must. It's an absolute must. It's called Aislinn's Montreal Expos, A Cartoonist's Love Affair by Terry Mosher, with a foreword by Charles Bronfman, and more memorabilia and memories than you can shake a stick at. And just a beautiful package, beautifully put
Thanks
together.
Very much. It's $50, by the way.
Yeah, that's okay.
That and seems a little steep, but remember, the money's going to the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah, and tip of the cap to Mary, too, because I see her name's in here.
Couldn't do it without Mary.
Ted?
Tara?
All the best.
Keep in touch.
Keep in touch.
Oh, do you want to do the tweet sheet? Do we have time?
Oh, do we have time for the tweet sheet?
Just for fun,
Okay.
Terry will enjoy this.
All right. Explain to Terry.
It's
what
a staple.
Do.
You have to
do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back in the day, when before I got fired, I used to do something on my radio program called the Tweet Sheet, where I'd pick three funny tweets from Twitter that I liked, and I'd use them on my show. And I'd always find tweets that I couldn't use on the radio because they were too salty. So I saved them for the podcast. So I have three here that I curated with you in mind. I thought you might enjoy these.
You might get it.
They'll pop up on the screen here.
Before you read, hold on.
Yep.
Hold on.
Our producer.
Good to go?
Yeah.
Is getting it up there on the screen. Okay.
This one, Terry, is an example from @BobTheSuit. Women's wine flavors. Barefoot bubbly, pretty Prosecco, really rosé. Men's whiskey flavors. Old Crow, whistle pig. Fuck you. So there's one.
There is some fun on Twitter.
Yeah, when they're not. From @KingGluey the 11th. Paul McCartney. Okay, so what if hits blunt? And hear me out on this, snorts a line. Everybody throws up. Lived on a submarine and it was fucking yellow. That's like a conversation from Grumpy's back in the 1980s, isn't it?
2.5K views. Yeah. Pretty good, yeah.
And one more from @BobJanky. I think it's cool when someone's name also kind of describes how they look, like Merle Haggard or my friend Jimmy Fuckface.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Okay,
I thought you guys would enjoy those.
The tweet shit. The tweet sheet. Our thanks to Terry Mosher. Thanks, Terry. It was awfully good of you to
come in. Wonderful
to
see you guys sitting here together having fun. We'll do this again. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. We'll do this again.
Again, September 20th is the anniversary of the last game. Played. 20th anniversary of the last game. And we're having a big get-together at Victoria Hall on a Sunday afternoon.
Are we invited?
Why don't you come along?
Okay. I'm in.
We'll mark that down.
I'm in.
Talk to Charles.
I will. Our thanks to our producer, Poseidon. Thank you, Poseidon.
No, es un problema.
Okay. Season 7 of the Standing By podcast. Thanks for listening.
Standing By, the Terry and Ted podcast, has been brought to you by the UPS Store Canada. The UPS Store near you is locally owned and operated by a member of your small business community.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.